I'm John Dankosky from Next and the New England News Collaborative. When you think of New England sports, you might think of the Red Sox or the Patriots. You probably don't think about one of the greatest heavyweight champions of all time, though. Yeah, Rocky Marciano, born Rocco Marchigiano, grew up in Brockton, Massachusetts. His first professional fight was in Holyoke, Mass., and most of his professional fights were fought in Providence, Rhode Island. Mike Stanton is a journalism professor at the University of Connecticut, and his new book is called Unbeaten, Rocky Marciano's Fight for Perfection in a Crooked World. I talked to Mike about Rocky's childhood in Brockton.
He was the oldest son in a family of six children, so there was a lot of responsibility ascribed to him. He loved sports. He had a fairly idyllic childhood. You know, he was a Depression child. He was born in the 1920s, came of age in the 1930s. There was a lot of anti-Italian prejudice in the 1920s in America and in Massachusetts. This was the age of the Sacco and Vanzetti, who were arrested on the Brockton trolley near Rocky's house. There were immigration bills passed in Congress to shut the doors to Italian immigrants who were branded as a race of pickpockets who should all be fingerprinted and rounded up. Mm-hmm. So he came of age in that environment. But within the confines of Brockton, there was a very vibrant Italian community that he came of age in. His grandfather was a leader in the community, would grow grapes and have raucous drinking and eating parties at his house. And the kids would hang out together. They would play sports. And he played baseball and whatever sport was in season, was outdoors all the time. In some ways, it was a very idyllic childhood. And kids would get into fist fights back then over disagreements. But then they would blow over like a summer storm.
Hmm. How did he become a boxer? How did he make that his trade?
Well, boxing, and this is what really drew me to the story, is it's really part of the fabric of America in the early to mid-1900s. And, you know, kids would box in backyards. You know, every little city would have its fight club and fight night. And, guys that worked in the factories would fight, and their families and friends would go see them fight. And a lot of them were not, dreaming of glory. They were just trying to get an extra paycheck and do something after hours. So Rocky came of age in that environment. He was a strong kid. He wasn't particularly motivated in school. He dropped out of high school. His first love was baseball. He could slug the ball a mile. And he had a tryout with the Chicago Cubs, and he washed out. And so boxing became his only alternative to avoiding the life in the shoe factories that he dreaded after seeing what his father endured.
Mm. Boxing at this point in American history, to many people, is a fringe sport. It doesn't have the same kind of following it used to have. You've hinted at this a little bit, Mike, but maybe you can take us back to that time and explain the hold that boxing had on the communities, not just that Rocky grew up in, but all across mm-hmm. America. Boxing was a very important thing, and it drew an awful lot of different sorts of characters to the crowds.
It did, John. Boxing was really, it was a place that immigrants would assimilate. It was a place that they could identify with their champions. It was a place for individuality in an increasingly impersonal age of factories and cities and industrialism. And there were all these ethnic rivalries that would, be like, Shakespearean plays that would play out in the ring. And you'd go to these smoky arenas in these small New England working class cities, Haverhill and Nashua and Portland and Holyoke and Lowell and, of course, Brockton and then Providence. And people would be from all walks of life would be there. You'd have the Irish foreman and the Italian workers. You'd have the owners of the factories, the policemen, the lawyers, the mobsters. There'd be betting going on in the background. There'd be all kinds of unsavory insinuations about fixed fights, especially in Providence, which was the mafia capital of New England.
Well, tell us more about that. Because the mafia controlled so much of the boxing world, explain how it affected matches that Rocky was part of and also went on around him. I mean, this was a controlling influence on the entire sport.
Well, there's different levels of it. When you get to the smaller level, these little working class cities in New England, it was more that the mob was there. There was a lot of gambling. People would bet on anything, not just the winners and the losers, but, what round would a knockout occur? And, in Providence, Raymond Patriarca was the up-and-coming mob boss of New England, and he would kind of hang out in the back of the old Rhode Island Auditorium with the bookies, and there'd be action on everything. And so there would be suspicions of fixed fights and that, a fighter was kind of told that you need to lose because certain fighters were, on the upswing and other fighters were just kind of cannon fodder.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier was the diversity in terms of race and ethnicity that was happening not only in Providence at the time, but in all these mill towns, people who'd come from all over the world. And many of these rivalries made their way into the boxing ring. We hear about a Holocaust survivor that Rocky fought, about a member of the Army's first African-American paratrooper unit mm-hmm. that he fought. So this is really a wide cross-section of America that made its way into the ring with Rocky. How much did race play a part in his story? He's an Italian-American immigrant, but he's fighting these people from all of these other backgrounds as well. Was race a big part of his story?
Yeah, race and ethnicity are really big parts because boxing is a prism into the story of immigration, because it's the people who come here who are on the bottom rungs trying to climb the ladder to success, to the American dream. And so what you see going back to the dawn of the 20th century, when boxing is semi-legal, you've got the Jewish fighters in the tenements, you know, battling their way out. You've got then the Irish fighters, then you've got the Italian fighters. And then you have the black fighters and the Latino fighters coming along. And so it's this great melting pot in the circled square. Aside from those ethnic rivalries, what I found with Rocky was there was a surprising amount of tolerance about people who are different. There was no racial animosity, and he respected the black fighters who he fought. He was, in 1952, when he became the champion, the first white champion since Joe Louis had knocked out James Braddock back in 1937. So it had been about 15 years. And so there was this kind of subtle great white hope mantle that was placed on him, but it was not one that he was ever comfortable with. He really did identify with the black fighters that he faced in the ring. You know, great unrated fighters like Ezra Charles, Jersey Joe Walcott, Archie Moore. And of course, he had a tremendous respect for Joe Louis, his boyhood idol, who he knocked out through the ropes in Madison Square Garden to end Louis's career and propel his own.
Of all the stories that you combed through when you were writing this book, what are some of your favorites?
Well, it was really kind of a journey of self-discovery for me. I grew up in Windsor Locks, Connecticut, a mill town on the Connecticut River. My father grew up in Ware, Massachusetts, a mill town. His father was a janitor. My father was one of the first in his family to go to college on the GI Bill. And he went to college in Providence. And he was there when Rocky was fighting. And he went to some of his fights, and he passed away about 16 years ago. And I went through his things, and I found among them an autographed poster of Rocky Marciano. So I like to think that this book is for all those little towns and all those little fighters that never got out. And, you know, one of my favorite stories is my dad later worked at Mount Holyoke College, and across the river in Holyoke, Massachusetts, another great, you know, the paper mill town, I reconstructed Rocky's first professional fight, where he fought on St. Patrick's Day under an Irish name of Rocky Mack in this town of heavily Irish and French-Canadian fighters. And it was just a wonderful scene, and the characters around the ring, and, you know, everyone thought that Rocky was an easy match, and he knocked his opponent out in the first round. And then he got into a tussle over how much he was supposed to be paid. He was expecting $50. He got $35. The promoter called the cops, and, you know, they finally sorted it out, and they got out of there. But I just love the atmosphere, these working class men and women. It was St. Patrick's Day, and every Monday night was fight night. It didn't matter if it was Christmas or St. Patrick's Day or the 4th of July. Every Monday was fight night.
Mm-hmm. When you get to understand the real life of someone like Rocky Marciano or Joe Louis, for instance, these are names that take on this almost heroic quality, and you can imagine stories being told that are true but are maybe a little bit embellished over time. Is knowing about the real Rocky Marciano make him bigger to you than just hearing the stories that people have told over time, which maybe were a little bit inflated?
They do, because, again, this goes back to how huge boxing was in our culture back then. It was as big as baseball, and if you were the heavyweight champion, everybody knew your name. Today, most people probably couldn't name the heavyweight champion of the world. But back then, Rocky was known by presidents, movie stars, politicians. And he never lost that New England identity. He never lost that Brockton identity. And there's all these wonderful stories about the people in Brockton would, you know, take the money out of their coffee tins and bet on his fights. And then they would take the winnings and roll them over into the next fight and the next fight. And they would buy refrigerators and cars and houses. And one time when he was a champion, a writer went to Brockton and talked to a taxi driver who talked about this elderly Italian couple before every fight Rocky had, the taxi driver would drive them to the loan office where they would borrow money so that they could bet on The Rock. And Rocky, who was the Brockton blockbuster, he wore the colors of his high school, black and red, into the ring, said that for them, you know, I could never let the people of Brockton down. For them, I always knew that I would get up.
Mm. The book is Unbeaten, Rocky Marciano's Fight for Perfection in a Crooked World, and the author is Mike Stanton. He joined us in studio today. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John. It was fun.
Listen to Next on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.